Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners, to another episode. My name is Mackenzie Tiggs. I am a local realtor in the Treasure Valley, as well as hold Raw Thoughts podcast. A podcast where I bring on individuals and we just talk about their life, where they've been, where they're at, and where they're going. I am an open platform where there is no criteria of who can come on this podcast. It's really just having an open mind and being able to learn from other people's experiences. I want to remind you that you can head over to my website, rawthoughtspodcast.com, see all of the individuals that have came on, have talked with me, as well as their contact information if it correlates with you or resonates with you in your life in any way. I'd also really love if you could make sure that you like, follow, and share this podcast with anybody that you think that could really benefit from this. Today, I have Michael Woolston, and he is somebody that, you know, has a book, has really gone into the culture and kind of the business mentorship. So I'm just going to leave it up to you, Michael, to share your story.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Mackenzie.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. Your studio is awesome here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for your time. And I get the privilege of speaking to leadership and to speaking to cultures. And I always joke a little bit, but it's really true that I've really made every mistake that you can when it comes to being a leader, and have really learned through a lot of failure. And you know, my history is I got to work at Starbucks for about 4 years and on their corporate level, and then be able to work at Idaho Central Credit Union for 13 years. And so I was a vice president with them and moved around the state and really helping build teams and build cultures. And I don't know if you were this way, but when I was young, when I was in my 20s, I was really convinced that I had the whole world figured out, that I really didn't need any sort of help. And so when I started my leadership journey, I really felt like, the best way to get the most out of people was to focus on the numbers and to, you know, really push real hard and, just really expect a lot out of people without the relationship. And believe it or not, that really failed.
Yeah.
That didn't go over really well. And I felt like, if I just really push real hard and I demand a lot of myself, then I'll get what I need or get what the company needs. And so I found out pretty quickly that there's a definitely different way to do it. And so that's part of what I want to be able to make sure that we get to talk about today, is a little bit of my leadership journey. But jumping, before that, I grew up in the Portland area, and my parents are two of the most hardest working folks ever. Both of them were, my dad did home construction and did general contracting for a number of years. And my mom was in the administrative areas, and both of them just never stopped working. I don't know if you have a similar experience, but
yes.
That really shapes, I feel like, who you are, is your parents' work ethic and sort of their bend towards things. So I think that for me was one of the big foundational pieces, and then kind of helped me kind of carry forward from there.
Yeah, I was really fortunate to also have a grandma that owned her own business, and my aunt worked for her. And talk about two individuals that continue to always work and push for the numbers in their early, left there late. That was their life. That was, I do remember having, going in and us kids would work in there and having those relationships and seeing those relationships from my grandma and aunt to the community. But there's still always the numbers in the back of their minds, everybody's mind. That's how you build,
That's how you build. Yeah. And it's really interesting because it's like, well, you do need to focus on numbers. I always say that, I really am data driven, and I love that. I love the financial piece, and went into the financial industry in part because of that. But a lot of what I talk about is you have to lead with the heart first. You have to get to know people. You have to really drive through relationship, I feel like, you got to focus on the root to be able to get to the fruit. And I had that so backwards for a time. But even thinking about, my parents and bringing that up, they worked hard because of not only, of course, to earn money, but also just that intrinsic value of a hard day's work. And, you know, not to get off on a tangent, but I think that's sometimes the part that's missing, especially with the newer workforce, or, you know, you could say even millennial and younger, is that that piece hasn't been as instilled of just the value of an honest day's work and just how you feel after being able to do that, whether it's physical labor or, you know, anything that's engaged that way. I feel like previous generations have really instilled that at a much deeper level. And I think there's definitely opportunities for us to do that a little bit better.
The phrase that really pops into my mind as you say that is like, work harder or work smarter, not harder. And I think that is generationally, we look back and we're like, why are we working that hard if we can make it simpler and get more done in our day, whether it be something that they want to do, not work related,
right,
and live life a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And there's that piece of it. And then also just the fact that we get to find kind of pleasure and purpose in the work that we do. And so I think we've heard a lot about that, whether it's quiet quitting or whether it's, you know, some of these other bigger shifts, you know, the great resignation, and people, you know, are saying, hey, wait a second, I really want to work and I do want to work hard, but I really want to love what I do. Mm-hmm. I really want to find purpose in what I do. And whenever that's missing, at least in the past, in really back, you know, previous generations, grandparents or great grandparents, you know, it was kind of like, oh, I work at one job for 40 years and nothing ever changes. And, you know, whether I like it or not, I'm just going to do it. And so you've seen shifts over time until today where, you know, people really are saying, no, I wanted to check all the boxes. And I really want to feel important in the work that I do. I want to feel valued, and I want a company who, you know, helps foster that for me. And so that's a lot of the work that I get to do as well, is help leaders build those types of cultures. I call it a lot more right brain than left brain. You know, I think there's a big shift that's happened with a lot of that, and people are having more emotional awareness around the workforce. Hey, you know, we probably shouldn't be pushing people and just trying to kind of have this revolving door. Maybe there's some changes we could make here that still help us be profitable, still help us focus on the numbers, but also have a more of a balance.
Right.
And so that's a big part of what I get to do as well.
So what was that switch where you realized you needed to lead from your heart and not just chase the money?
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, it was chasing the money, but it was also achievement-based. Right. So I need to provide for my family. I need to hit the numbers because that's what, you know, the company wants. And all of those things can be powerful motivators. And I would say not necessarily even bad motivators. But when I start viewing people as numbers or what I can get from them, and I don't actually view them as people, things always go wrong. At least has been my experience. And honestly, Mackenzie, what really hit home for me was that it was spilling over into my personal life too. So my wife was just like, you know, like you're around, but you're not really around. And my team was like, well, we feel like you're a nice guy, but you just don't really care about us. That was the feedback that I got from one manager. And then I had another person leave, you know, in that same time frame. So I kind of hit this crisis point where I was like, man, this just feels really rough. Like this feels like there's a lot of friction here. And is it supposed to be this hard? Is it really supposed to be this way? Could there be a different way for this to go? And I think anytime we hit a crisis point or we get some negative feedback or we feel like, gosh, this is just isn't working because things didn't feel like they were working at home. They didn't feel like they were working at work. I wasn't actually achieving what I wanted. And the harder that I pushed, I don't know if this has been true for you, but anytime in our lives that we feel like we're hitting a wall and I just try to push through that wall instead of stopping for a moment and saying, well, what am I supposed to learn from this? And could there be a different way? And kind of flipping the frustration into more curiosity and maybe even a little bit of hope. That's what it looked like for me. I had to stop and honestly, like, drop everything else that I was doing to say, well, maybe there's a better way.
I think it's a lot of self-recognition at that point because you're pushing. And it's like you're only pushing against the same brick wall and nothing's going to change if you continue to push.
Right.
You're only getting further and further in pain for you than you are taking a step back and reevaluating the whole picture. and sometimes saying, what am I doing that is affecting the surroundings?
Right. Yeah. And I think the recognition piece for me, I mean, there's so many different pieces there, but for me, it was like that you kind of feel devastated for a time, which I think is part of the process. You kind of grieve for a little bit and you're like, wait a second, I am a big part of this problem, or, you know, I am the problem. But I think the hope in that too is that if we're part of the problem, that also means that we can be part of the solution.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the part that gave me hope of like, well, you know, if there's a different way, how could that look? And something I talk a lot about with leaders and part of my own story is, you know, actually apologizing for what you've done to other people, and how it has affected them, how you can visibly see that, and then actually connecting with them on, hey, you know, for one of my managers specifically, I was so focused on their performance, and I even used words like, oh, I'm disappointed that you didn't do blah, 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 right? And I could see every time that I did that how dejected that. I was treating them like a child, basically,
yeah,
right? But I didn't know it at the time because I was so wrapped up in myself and I was so wrapped up in what I wanted and what I needed to see from them that once I got down to that, they're like, wow, yeah, thank you. Basically thank you for seeing me and thank you for acknowledging that. Because I think once we can apologize as leaders in a really heartfelt way when we see that we've affected someone, it allows us to sort of not only hit the reset button, but really start from a new place. And that's one of the things that I see a lot with leaders is, well, how do I acknowledge something that's happened? And how do I actually move forward? And unfortunately, real heartfelt apologies or, you know, kind of this relationship driven model, you know, it sounds really great until you are like, holy crap, I've made a mistake, or holy crap, how do I kind of deal with this issue that's come up? And so that's a lot of what I try to focus on is, well, how do we be real, number one, with each other? And then how do we navigate some of these tough issues? Because if you're managing others or you're leading a business or you're really interacting with other humans, we really struggle in how to do that effectively, not only addressing the issues, the hard stuff, but then also, well, how do I motivate those who I work with and sort of appeal to the best parts of them, right? That's a lot of what I talk about. Yeah. Is how do I appeal to the best parts of who we are instead of always maybe focusing on some of the negative attributes?
Yeah. How do you, if you have an individual that, you know, people have left their teams or people have, you know, left their leadership or their management and they're having all this turnover, like, how do you get that person that really you can see where the problem is the epicenter? How do you get them to wake up?
Yeah. Well, they're probably not working with me if they haven't woken up to a certain point, right?
Yeah.
I'm definitely not somebody who's like, hey, let me come in and, you know, tell you all the stuff that you messed up. And there's not an openness there. So obviously, I think that self-awareness is key. And sometimes self-awareness is driven based off of, well, here's the situation. I've got great people leaving, or I can't attract great people, or gosh, I feel like there's something more. That's a lot of what I hear. Man, I feel like we're working so hard right now and it just feels like there's way too much friction, or there's a whole nother level we could go here, but I don't know what that looks like to get there. And so definitely an openness and a willingness to say, could we kind of explore that a little bit more? And then for me, I think a lot of times we know the answers. It's just sometimes really hard for us to admit it. So with my story, you know, I knew that there were things not going great, but it was harder for me to actually go through that process to say, okay, well, why are things off? Why does it not feel the way that it should feel? Why am I having great people leave? And, you know, I always say that there's kind of like an accepted truth, especially within leadership circles or just in any group. There's sort of like the, okay, this is what we talk about and this is what we don't talk about. And then there's always the ground truth. Like, actually, this is what's actually going on, right? Or here's what people are talking about around the water cooler, or, you know, those types of things. And so I really try to engage leaders in, well, how can we get that information? Right? What are people actually talking about? What are the things that they're saying that they would tell you, but they don't want to hurt your feelings?
Right.
And because I think, you know, naturally, you know, people don't necessarily want to give a lot of negative feedback.
Well, and a lot of people don't want to honestly hurt your feelings.
Right.
You know, so how do you get that actual truth out of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times I'll ask them questions based off of evidence and say, okay, well, tell me about the situation and then what happened. But if there isn't an awareness around that, a lot of times what I'll do is do like a culture survey or do something where it's completely blind, anonymous, and people start asking or answering questions like, well, how valued do I actually feel in the work that I'm doing? How do I feel, you know, and a lot of times it's a scale. I had a scale, you know, with one being the lowest, 10 being the highest. How much do I feel like my potential is being maximized? How much time is being spent with me? So we do things like a time audit. Cool, you're telling me your team is amazing and like the most important thing in the world. Well, how are you spending your time? Well, you know, I check in with them, you know, once a day for about 5 minutes. Or, hey, you know, we sit down for half an hour every couple months. But that kind of gets pushed back because we've got all these other things going on. And you know, my story is whatever's most important to us is the thing that we're going to spend the time towards, but also our most, we're the most intentional towards. And so a lot of times it's just reframing that, helping leaders not feel guilty towards spending the time for, number one, themselves, if that's the area that really needs to be focused on. And there's some awareness around that. But then also, how do you really spend time with your team and help them be even more effective? And sometimes you just don't know that without asking some deeper questions of them. So,
yeah. What is one of the tools that you seem to use the most on these like team building, you know, the stuff that you do?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, you mentioned that. And this always provokes a lot of discussion, but I have an exercise called Behind Your Back. Because a lot of times I think as leaders, and I think just people in general, we're kind of concerned about, well, what are people saying about me, you know, or what do they think, or what's perception? You can get really wrapped up in that really easily. And so one of the exercises that I'll do if I have a group is pick one person, and everybody else gets to share what they actually think about that person, and what they take away from them. And or how they've impacted their life or something like that. And most of the time I always have to like say, are there tissues in the room? Because what's cool is that people naturally gravitate towards the positive, right? And I think a lot of times we can be our own harshest critic and we can be our own worst enemy. And we can have all these thoughts towards, well, this is how this person thinks about me or feels about me. And even in dysfunctional organizations, even in organizations where or teams where things are a little bit challenging, when you're asked to say, well, what do you love about this person or what is the thing that you think of the most when you think of them, what's neat is to see the similarities that people bring up, but also that that person typically feels very overwhelmed by the positive, overwhelmed by the good. And I've never met a leader or an organization or anybody who said, you know, I left because it was too positive.
Yeah.
I left because they complimented me too much. You know, I left because people cared about me too much. You know, it's typically we don't speak the words that we already have in our head and our heart. And we don't have maybe we feel like there's no medium for that or not as many mediums for that. And so I just try to help create that space first. That's probably one of the most powerful ones. And then, you know, another tool that I use quite a bit is, how are you growing as an individual leader in the areas that are most important just for your overall health? Because a lot of times I think there's just more issues of capacity and not desire. I work with a lot of very heart-driven, focus, service-driven leaders. And, you know, the big piece for them is spreading themselves too thin. It's not a matter of like, do they actually have a heart for people? It's, man, do they have enough at the end of the day? And so I really kind of focus in on the areas of, well, where are you at with your faith? You know, what do you believe in? And, you know, it can look different for each person. Mm-hmm. But what does that actually mean and look like for you? What about your health? Are there some areas of your health that you're really wanting to focus on? What about your relationships? And how out of those things, you know, not everybody's going to share everything that they're focused on. But how can we help as a team you know, encourage those things? It might be, gosh, you know, I really want to see my kid's soccer game. And to be honest with you, that would be amazing to be able to have kind of that balance, to be able to go and do more of that. That will help me fill up my bucket with my family and my relationships, which will allow me to actually work a lot better over here. But a lot of times there's maybe guilt around taking time off, or gosh, I don't even know if I want to talk about that, or an unhealthy culture of expressing desires.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They feel, I think nowadays everyone's just in the grind. Mm-hmm. Like they're in the grind for, you know, one specific thing. And you talked about spreading yourself too thin, you know, and that I know definitely can correlate with so many other things happening, you know, because you don't have time for your family. You don't have time for yourself. You don't have time to go to the gym. Like when you are spreading yourself so thin, like you don't even have enough energy to want to do those things because you've expelled it all.
Right. And being okay with saying no, you know, building cultures where it's like, it's actually okay to say no. And I think, unfortunately, again, because if we're wrapped up in perception or wrapped up in, well, I've got to do the next thing to look good, to be able to grow, or, you know, whatever those obligations might be, really having leaders who help model that of, guys, it is okay to log off at this time. And, yeah. And that's a lot of what I see is an over service. And anytime that happens, well, there's a couple things that typically happen. You know, one is we can twist the very thing that we're really focused on serving, and we can start really, we can really struggle with our motivation towards it and being consistent with it, but then we can start dreading it. And we can really start grumbling and being irritated, or really honestly even turn to hate the very thing that we said that we wanted to serve. Because, not really because anything changed on their side, right? But because we decided to overdo it.
Right.
We didn't have the boundaries in place to really slow down and say, actually, that is something I need to not do right now. And it's a different mindset to be able to say, I'm saying no so that I can say yes to something else. But also, you deserve my best. And that's a phrase that I've really tried to use a lot more of and coach towards too, of, you know, you deserve my best, so I'm not going to sign up for this, or I'm not going to do this, or this isn't the right time, but I want to be able to connect with you in 30 minutes once, you know, hey, there's somebody else in front of you in line type of thing. And I think those boundaries are a little bit harder for folks, especially if they have that heart of service. But the more I have some of those healthy boundaries, not to push people away, but to make sure that I'm actually at a place where I have the high energy and I have the right heart and I'm not burnt out and I can actually give people my best, that's the heart that I want to be able to have as a leader. And I think it's just way more sustainable instead of the constant state of burnout or the bigger burnout that can happen if you stay in the other place. So.
Yeah. What's your biggest advice to avoiding the burnout?
Well, you know, there's a big focus on purpose and why and, you know, those types of things. And I think it's so important to be able to say, what is your core belief? I actually brought it here to the studio, but I have a little planner. And I think there's a lot of power in your daily declaration. You know, why were you put on this planet? What are you meant to serve, and who are you meant to serve? And that's bigger than just our vocation, right? That goes back to some of the other principles and the other things that I talked about. But I think if we're living that and speaking that, you know, every single day, my goal, what I'm called to do, is to help empower and encourage leaders in their everyday lives, right? That's when I wake up in the morning, it's like, that's what I'm focused on. So what is that for that leader? What does it look like for them? It's different for each person. And so I think that's a huge driver. And then I think the other piece, as funny as this sounds, adults have a hard time having fun. One of the areas that I focus on is what fills your cup, what you know, fills your bucket. And for me personally, like, I need to be outside. I was sharing with you earlier, I'm from Coeur d'Alene, you know, live up in Coeur d'Alene, you know, and so we have tons of, you know, beautiful trees, and I just get to be outside. If I'm not outside at least 3 times a week, my wife's like, Michael, you're getting kind of weird. You just get outside, like, go do something, kind of like the kids, right? Like, get outside. So I think that's just so critical and important, is what are the things that are restorative instead of kind of being at this place where, oh, I just need to keep working harder, or I can't afford to. There's sort of this idea of, I can't afford to stop. I can't afford to slow down. I've got 20 other things on my list. And what I've found is, it's almost the opposite of that. I can't afford not to slow down. I can't afford not to play a little bit. I can't afford not to do these things that restore me, because if I don't, I'm going to have burnout. It's not a matter of if, but just when. Yeah. So
how did you figure out your kind of daily declaration? Because I know a lot of people sitting down and actually asking that question of like, why are you doing this? Why is this your purpose? They get stuck. They're like, I actually don't know.
Yeah.
And my biggest response is like, well, why not? Like, why not start a podcast? Why not start, you know, this next thing that's happening? How do you really help individuals figure out what their purpose is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a quote that it says the quality of your life is dependent on the quality of the questions that you ask yourself and others. And that's really hit home to me, because sometimes I'll ask myself a question or I'll have a question asked of me and I'm like, oh boy, that, I don't know. I'm gonna have to think about that for a second. And that's really easy just to skip that, right? And just move on. So I have a couple different exercises and things that I work on with leaders, but I think it's really important to slow down and build in a time. This is a great time of year to do that because people are focused on goals and intentions for the new year. But really asking yourself some of those questions, and some of them specifically are, what are the things that I just lose myself in, right? What are some of the things that I love doing that feel almost kind of effortless? What do I find a lot of passion and purpose behind the work? What are some of the common threads? So if you've been in this work-life thing for a little while, what are some of the things that I've found, even if it's in, you know, different industries, it may not even seem like there's a whole lot of consistency there. Oh, you know, I did this and I served in this way and that. Yeah, it seems like there's kind of like a similar pattern here. And then I, you know, even jumping back to childhood, what are some of the things that you naturally did that you were curious around in childhood that you pretended, typically the age 5 to 6, and then moving forward to age 10, that's kind of this sweet spot before, I kind of joke, before kind of the world gets to you a little bit, you know, and there's kind of maybe some things that are put on you. That age range you can really kind of typically go back to and say, oh, you know, for me, I loved exploring and I loved hiking. And, you know, I would even try to lead. I'm the oldest out of 3 boys, so I'd kind of lead my family. And my parents were always watching me. But I always wanted to be that person who not only was out front, but not for the sake of, oh, hey, look at me. When I was at that age, it was I wanted to explore and be part of that expedition, if you will, to see what was around the next bend, but also to keep an eye on everyone else to make sure that they knew what was coming next.
Yeah.
Right. And that, so when I started going and asking those questions of myself and seeing those similarities, I was like, oh, wow, wait a second. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. It just looks different.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great reminder, you know, I don't have children, but I think it's a great reminder for parents when like kids have this really extravagant idea and you're like, you can't do that. Like that's not you, or like, let them explore those things. Like it's silly, but I do remember on every single, you know, parent teacher conference, I always got in trouble for talking every single time. Like every single time that my mom got called, it was like, you know, Mackenzie's just talking too much. Like she's just, you know, making friends with everybody. And now I look back on that and I'm like, that's exactly what I do to this day still. Mm-hmm. You know, me and my best friend met in the first grade from talking with each other because we were, you know, helping the special needs kids. Mm-hmm. And it really does come back to, you know, the parenting where it's like, let your kids explore. Like, don't put too much on them. Like, let them figure out who they want to be. Because you're talking about that. Those are the times where they really are going to figure out who they are.
Totally.
What they like, what their passions are, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. My 3 boys are that way. You know, they're so different. They're now 18, 16, and 12. And they're totally different people. But it is really fun to see. So my oldest, you know, he would play with cars, but he would line them up. Right. And he would line them up based off of type. And then he would line them up based off of color. And then he would, you know, like, he's just very orderly. And then he got into chemistry. And then he does video editing now. You know, like it's, it was all about sequence and order. And my middle son is literally that kid where you're like, oh my gosh, do his parents even take care of him? Like, his hair's all crazy. You know what I mean? And he's probably broken something already before the morning's through. And he's just totally rough and tumble. But loves story, loves adventure, loves activity, you know what I mean? And so they're so different. And so to your point, it's really cool to see that. And I appreciate you encouraging parents to do that, because I think, unfortunately, a lot of times as parents, we can kind of put our kids in certain boxes or say, well, this is just kind of how this is supposed to look, instead of fostering the things that are just naturally like bubbling outside of them. And for you, obviously, how cool is that, that you just naturally are, I just love talking to people. And now you have this podcast, right? And obviously do the other things that you get to do. But all that was sort of like ingrained in you and part of your natural nature even way back then.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's sometimes interesting, right? Because yeah. You're like, most of the times what kids get in trouble for is actually what they're going to do when they are grown up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, how do you really teach these leaders? Like, you have the leader, but you also have the team.
Right.
And that's a lot of personalities. That's a lot of different, you know, humans that you are engulfed with. Like, how do you do this?
Yeah, yeah. If I could really distill it down, one of the big principles of what I do, because, you know, let's just be totally honest. When we're talking about leadership or we're talking about relating with people, there's not really anything new under the sun. Now, there's different approaches and different ways to do it, but I am super big into consistency. Right. If I say I'm going to do something, I need to do it. And I think that's where a lot of times we can either have a lot of guilt as a leader of, well, I'm trying to lead these people, but I'm not following that example. Right. I'm telling everybody to eat lunch, but I never eat lunch. Or, you know, I'm demanding certain things of people and I'm not following that expectation. That's typically the place that I start is, well, what are the areas that we really want to focus on for you personally as a leader that you want to grow in your integrity, right? And in your character and who you are. There's a equation that I had a friend share with me, which is stated belief plus actual practice equals actual belief. So I can say all day long that I believe in whatever I believe in, right? But the proof is in the pudding, right? It's the proof right. Is in what I do every day. So I just really try to hone in on what are the areas within the business, what are the areas within individuals that are the most important to them that I hear that they say or maybe don't even say that we get to drill down into. And if it's specifically, hey, I want to grow, you know, in my time that I spend with my team, I don't feel like I spend enough time with them. Cool. Let's drill that down and make it really measurable. And let's try to make the goal really, really small. So a lot of times we make these big goals, whether it be with relationships or health-driven, right? I do the P90X 3000 and I kill myself and I try to do it. It's like, is that going to be sustainable forever for my whole life? Probably not. Not that it's not good for a time, but what can I do that's really small? So we build really small goals. Hey, I want to be able to check in with my team, you know, 5 minutes every day. What if I did that for 3 months straight? What could that look like? Do you feel like 5 minutes is really a whole lot? No, actually, it feels like it's way too small. Awesome. Let's stay with that. Let's do that. Let's do that again and again and again and again and again. And if I keep it really small, what if I did a little bit more? What if it ended up being 10 minutes, you know? But it's more about hitting, you know, consistency and hitting the mark and then building in some of the tracking tools, because we can have great intentions, and I find that a lot with myself and other leaders and really every area of life is, yeah, I should be doing that, or, oh, I need to do that, or once this slows down, then I'll do this. And my challenge is always, well, life always gets in the way. So what are we going to focus on and make the priority? And once we have some freedom in a certain area, whether it be with relationships, whether it be with helping build our teams, whether it be, hey, we need to address some conflict, you know, maybe make that a priority in what we're doing every day or every week, then everything else starts feeling a little bit easier instead of having that same level of friction. And so to really distill it down, it's what are my motivations, right? What are my goals? What are my aims? So how do I motivate myself and my team? How do we track it? So it needs to be measurable. It needs to be something I can write down every day. I can see something that holds me accountable. And then how do we celebrate? That's the portion that I think sometimes gets missed is, okay, cool, I checked that off or I did that, but what does it actually look like to celebrate that? Even the small wins that I have personally and with my team, because then that helps build the positive habits, right? That helps build the positive change over time. And it's really specific to each person. For me personally, I love doing things like this. I could talk all day long. Well, some of the task stuff, some of the Excel spreadsheets, some of the emails, you know, like those technical pieces, I don't really love and I don't really dig. I think you're kind of the same way,
right? I'm exactly the same way.
You're like, oh, this isn't my favorite. So I need to build some systems around that and some accountability around that. And so for other people, it might be the exact opposite. Like, oh my gosh, I could stay at my computer all day long. I could do all this back end stuff all day long. Talking to people is a little bit harder for me. And okay, well, let's make some goals around that. Get you out of your comfort zone a little bit that way and help you kind of build some accountability towards that. So
yeah. I want you to talk a little bit about, you know, what you said, the celebration, because I think a lot of people, they have these goals, whether it be small, whether it be big, and they hit them, but then they don't celebrate them. Mm-hmm.
It's one of the, that's actually the fun piece kind of ties into this a little bit, you know, with leaders. And I would say for most of us is kind of losing some of that childlike fun and excitement around life. And even just taking a break in a way that's restorative, not just like, oh, I get to take a break, so I should do some laundry. Or I'm going to go to the extreme and I'm just going to binge watch something that doesn't actually like fill me up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm just going to go do something that is kind of mindless. And don't hear me wrong. I mean, I can binge watch something too, but there's just something different around this helps restore me. And so the celebration piece helps acknowledge that, hey, I focused on a goal, I tracked it, and then now I get to celebrate that win. And it can be something as simple as that was awesome. That was so good to see that success. Or I'm really thankful that I got to learn this today. Or gosh, you know, ending my day in gratitude. So a lot of times folks will have a gratitude journal or they'll do something. I always say it's great to set your day off with intention in the morning and then celebration at night. And if you start that cycle, a lot of times what we can do, and I don't know if you're ever guilty of this, a lot of times people really struggle sleeping, especially leaders, because they're thinking about all the things they didn't do. Oh, I could have done that, or oh, they still got this, and whatever. It's kind of cool to flip that and say, well, what are the things I did get done? Okay, I still got 10 other things to do on my list, right. Or hey, I maybe struggled in these areas. That's always going to be true. How do I get to end my day in celebration to help set me up for the next day for success? And then helping your team see that too, because there's a lot of language around basically being defeated. You know, oh, I didn't get this accomplished. I didn't know. Yeah. Cool. Well, what did you get done today? But what do we get to celebrate, right? But and looking for some of those things too that people naturally wouldn't talk about. So one trap that I've seen is that, you know, people, leaders will focus on celebration and they'll say something like, well, you know, what do you guys want to brag about? What do you want to talk about? Well, most people don't actually love bragging about themselves, or it's kind of a little bit harder for that to happen. But what's really easy is for me to brag about somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. So building that piece in of, hey, guys, what did somebody else do on the team that we can celebrate? Hey, as a leader, what can you find and celebrate for them? And it builds that, I call it that culture of celebration, not only in personally in my own day to day, but then also now I'm looking for all the wins. And when we win and when we, you know, are able to enjoy that, success always builds on success. And failure can build on failure, too. But the more I'm looking for those things, it's easy to build on top of those.
Yeah. How do you get through people, teammates, that they participate in these things, right? They participate in really kind of bragging about their other teammates, but you just know it's not true. Like they're just not there. They're just saying it to kind of checkbox the mark, you know, or like checkbox it. But you're like, that was, you had no emotion. You had no heart in that. Like, you're just saying it to say it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love asking that question of, hey, help me understand this, right? Now, a lot of times as a leader, if we're initiating something or you're starting something off, or, you know, we're talking about things like emotions and we're talking about celebrate, you know, some of this is kind of warm and fuzzy and not everybody's that way. And I totally get that. But when you're describing what you're describing, which is basically like, oh, they're just kind of like going through the motions. This isn't real. It doesn't feel like that, you know. Helping them see, kind of like putting up the mirror of, hey, when you shared that, here's just what I kind of saw, right? Seemed like you're kind of just like here, but not really here. So help me understand that. Is there something deeper going on, right? Or hey, help me, you know, this is what I saw, you know. And a lot of times what I found is that there's always a deeper story, right? Somebody may feel really uncomfortable doing that exercise. Somebody, it may not be their natural thing. They may not really want to do that or not actually have something in place where they're like, crap, I felt like I was kind of caught off guard and now I had to make something up, you know? I mean, there's lots of different reasons. Hey, I'm going through something really hard. That's actually a lot more common than I really would have thought, whether it's for leaders or for teams, is that everybody's going through something, right? Or maybe you've just gone through something outside of work. But there's no, a lot of times, permission to kind of go there because it feels like, oh, it's either, you know, could go into a counseling session or something deeper. But there is a space for acknowledgement that people are people and that everybody's going through something. And so I always try to leave that space open because I can get really wrapped up in, well, they're not buying in and they're not wanting to be part of the team. And they're just mailing it in. Is there something deeper going on there at home that I have no like context for, I have no understanding for?
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think as a leader, we can become curious instead of maybe becoming offended or like, well, they're not being part of the team. Let's try to get some understanding first. And then if that's a pattern longer term, I've always said when you have this bent towards, hey, we're going to be right brain and we're going to be positive and we're going to focus on celebration, people self-select. And if they're totally like, dude, I'm not down for this. This isn't, you know, where I want to go. That's totally fine. But typically they'll sort of self-select out because they don't want to be a part of something deeper. And those who aren't quite sure and they're on the fence, it's that consistency that helps make things safe. When things are inconsistent and a leader's trying on these different things and they try to do it for a minute and then they don't, that just is, it's kind of like, it's kind of like bad parenting. It's kind of like, oh, we're going to try this method this month, you know.
It gets confusing because you aren't sticking to that one thing, you know, where, yes, a lot of people are adaptive and are open to change. But when you're changing that frequent or that fast, you're like, what do you even want from me?
Right.
Like, what am I supposed to be doing?
Right.
You know, and a lot of confusion comes from that. And then nothing really gets done.
Yeah. And I'm really big on, well, number one, I want to be on the same side of the table as those that I lead. And I really focus on that with leaders too, is being permission-based. Hey, are you okay if we would do this? Right. Are you okay if we try this? You know, could you help me in the next meeting? And, you know, here's what I saw. Could you help me maybe, you know, address it this way? Or maybe could you put in a little bit more thought towards it? Because I know you care about your team. You know, maybe think about what McKinsey's doing, you know, and try to help them along, because I think sometimes as leaders, we just expect that people should do what we want them to do, or that they should be at the same level that we are in certain areas where someone may have a little bit of a struggle towards that. So how can I help equip them and be on their side instead of maybe being offended that they didn't do it the way that I want them to do it?
Yeah. As we kind of wrap things up, is there anything from the leadership, the team, the business aspect that you want to touch on that we haven't touched on?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I feel like the last few years have been really challenging, I think, for everyone in the workforce for lots of different reasons. And I think one of the things that I'm most passionate about, as you've probably heard, is really helping leaders be holistically taken care of. And I think as we, and I know you do a lot with, you know, focusing on mental care, right, for a lot of the folks that you have on the podcast here, I think it's so important to be a well-integrated leader and to lead teams in those ways. So, you know, again, whether it's your faith or whether it's your health or whether it's your relationships or having fun or growing your business, how does that look in a sustainable way? I think we've done it for so long in what I would call a very breakneck way or even a survival mode. And as we move forward, I think the businesses and the leaders and the folks who are actually going to not only survive, but really thrive in the cultures that they build are going to be the ones who say, we're open to trying something a little bit different. You know, it's okay to tweak what we've been doing and sort of change the norm around that. And so I guess the last thing I would leave is if there's any people who are listening who want that or are on that journey, I would just encourage you to continue, because I feel like that is what's going to be needed as we move forward, is to have really passionate, heart-driven leaders who see the whole person. And if you're already on that path, amazing. If you're not, you heard a little bit of my story, and I just encourage folks to start making that shift now, because there's so much more life in that. And there's also way more engagement, way more profits. I mean, all the things that come from it, that fruit, like I was talking about earlier, just naturally comes when you have that focus. And so, yeah, it's just a privilege to be able to be on the podcast and be able to speak a little bit to some of these items. So.
Yeah, absolutely. While you were talking, there was one more question that kind of popped up in my head about leadership was kind of the age and the female-male role. Like, how do you combat a lot of that? Because, you know, whether it be male, female, whether it be young or older, like, there is some friction between that I can see from different organizations that I've been through. Like, how do you start eliminating that?
Well, I think talking about it is definitely the big piece. I think recognizing, number one, that there's an issue, and then, you know, kind of going back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier about the ground truth. Well, what are people actually experiencing? Because I may not see that in, you know, where I'm at with my age or where I'm at with, you know, my gender or different things like that. But, you know, what is everybody else potentially experiencing? And then how do we focus on helping people be in whatever role they're supposed to be in and help support them, no matter what that looks like, right? No matter what age looks like or gender or anything else that way, I think is really important. So dialogue is, I would say, the big one. And then, you know, the other piece for me that's important in empowering leaders is giving them true ownership. And sometimes that means having people, especially if they're newer to the organization or newer to the workforce or newer to the role, whatever it may be, giving them the ownership and the ability to succeed 100%. And sometimes that means that they might fail or struggle too. But I've noticed sometimes that it's kind of like, well, we'll give people certain areas or we'll give them a little bit, but not that full ownership to help see that success. Because that's where, I don't care who you are and I don't care what your background is, if you can own something and own an area and show the benefits of that, then you can help kind of grow and rise.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really critical as well.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you again coming in and just being able to speak with us on teams and leadership and what your knowledge has and sharing that with my guests. Where can people reach you at?
Well, I have my website, michaelwolston.com. I'm on all the socials. I'm not on TikTok. I tried it for a minute. I don't know.
It's not my thing.
When my 16-year-old was like, Dad, TikTok's kind of like crazy, you know, he was like, I don't really spend a lot of time on it. I was like, So I'm on all the socials other than that, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and YouTube. So folks can find me that way as well.
Awesome. Yeah. And I know you post a lot of just little tidbits. So I encourage my listeners to go and just follow and kind of hear some of the little tidbits that you can learn along the way. And if you want to reach out to him, then all of the information will also be in my show notes, as well as the website, rawthoughtspodcast.com, where you can find all of his information and reach out. And Michael, thank you again so much for coming on.
Thank you, Mackenzie.
Yes, thank you. Thank you guys for listening to another episode. Bye. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Raw Thoughts Podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could follow, like, subscribe, and share with anybody that you think would be interested in this. You could also head over to my website at rawthoughtspodcast.com and see any other guests that have been on the episodes. You could also go over to Instagram and follow at rawthoughts.podcast. I would really appreciate it, and always send me a message if you're interested in being a guest or any feedback.